Straight Shooter with Stephen A.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the latest edition of the Straight Shooter with yours truly, the one and only Stephen A. Smith, coming at you right here over the airwaves of Sirius XM, POTUS Radio, channel 124. You know I love coming to y'all. You know I got a lot of stuff to talk about today. It appears that we are ending the government shutdown. 43 days, 43 nights. American citizens working for the feds were not receiving a check. 43 days, the longest government shutdown in United States history. The longest before this was 2018 and the 2019 under then President Donald Trump in his first term. Needless to say, the now longest shutdown was also with Donald Trump in office as the president of the United States, 45 and now 47. We can look at it any way we want to. And we got a lot of stuff to get into. And don't you worry, I'm going to get into these damn Epstein files in just a second. We can look at it any way we want to. We can slice it any way we want to. And put the number up on the screen, please, so I can see it for calling the POTUS Radio right here, Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Smith. Listen, when you look at what has transpired, it's pretty damn annoying, to say the least. You just find yourself wondering what the hell is going on. I'm still disgusted because there's no excuse for this. Now, I don't know about anybody else, and everybody's talking about, you know what, pick a side. Damn, y'all, shut the hell up. I'll pick whatever side I want to pick. It's not about a side in this particular instance. It's about government officials in the White House, in Congress, on the Senate, that didn't come together to get a deal done for 43 days and nights. We've had Speaker Mike Johnson on this show. We've had Representative Jim Jordan on the show. We've had elected officials like Akeem Jeffries, the Democratic House Speaker. We've had them all on this show, and everybody's got their excuses. But in the end, this government shutdown needed to come to an end. And that's why I'm kind of surprised, and I don't know why I should be, but I am, that we have a situation where we've got elected officials on the Democratic side losing their damn minds, calling folks out, acting like it's a picket line that was crossed, for crying out loud. And how dare folks on the Democratic side do this? Hold down the fort. Don't cave. Don't do everything you can to make sure that the Republicans don't get the 60 votes necessary to push through a continual resolution. Now, the Republicans will have you say, and they'll remind you that when Biden, during his administration, from 2021 to 2025, they signed a CR 14 separate occasions. But the Democrats wouldn't do it during Trump's first term. They wouldn't do it now. Why? Because you're talking about the Affordable Care Act subsidies that they were trying to stretch. Things that were put into place because COVID came along, by the way, that had an expiration date of December 31st, 2025. That they wanted to extend into perpetuity. And the Republicans weren't going for that, which everybody knew, because Trump has been after squashing Obamacare since 2014, 2 years before he became president the first go-round. So why in God's name would he do anything to push forward with Affordable Care Act, ACA subsidies, for another year, another 3 years, another 5 years? Why would he do that? It's one thing for them to do it during COVID. It's another thing entirely for them to do it now. We knew he was going to hold down the fort. I don't blame folks like Fetterman out of Pennsylvania, or anybody else for that matter, from New Hampshire, from Pennsylvania, from Nevada, all the elected officials from Nevada. I don't blame them one bit. I side with the Democrats who ultimately crossed the line and said, yo, this is killing the American citizens in our district. And what the Democrats to me are not realizing is that you're essentially confessing to the fact that this was a plan all along, that you had every intention of the government being shut down, that you knew there was no way in hell that you were willing to capitulate to anything involving the CR that the GOP put forth to you from last spring when Chuck Schumer wouldn't go along with it and didn't produce a government shutdown, to this time around where he obviously took a different position, at least publicly, because he's afraid to lose his power in his Senate seat because he hears the footsteps of AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, creeping up behind him to take over his Senate seat in 2028. We know what's going on here. We know what's going on. But in the end, to me, when you're talking about 42 million people on SNAP that were in danger of not being fed while Thanksgiving is approaching, when you see the inordinate amount of flight delays that have taken place because air traffic controllers ain't at work in abundance, some being furloughed, some being let go, folks wondering about whether they will get paid retroactively, which ultimately this new CR is supposed to resolve. All of those concerns are legitimate. All of it. And they said, no, we can't go for that. We can't go for that. And just for the record, you see the screen right there. In regards to the shutdown, 45% of registered voters think Republicans in Congress are more responsible for the government shutdown. 39% think Democrats in Congress are more responsible, and 11% volunteer that they think both parties are equally responsible. Among independents, 48% think Republicans in Congress are more responsible. 32% think Democrats in Congress are more responsible. 14% volunteered that they think both parties are equally responsible. If you're the Democrats, that's good news. Because considering how you got blown out during the 2024 election, these numbers would be considered improved numbers. Because now you're gaining traction. We saw you win the mayoral seat with a socialist in New York City. We saw you win gubernatorial seats in New Jersey with Mickey Sherrill and with Abigail Spanberger in Virginia. So if you're the Democrats and you're having those kind of wins, even though everybody and their grandmama knew those were blue states and they weren't going to lose to the GOP in those states, the bottom line is you think you're gaining traction. And because you thought you were gaining traction, you're willing to sit out even longer. What was the reason for that? Because you want to regain power, which I'm not faulting. But when we're talking about the American people suffering during the shutdown, spanning 43 days, and we talk about people not being fed during Thanksgiving holidays, and we're talking about travel nightmares, and we're talking about people being furloughed, and we're talking about people having to work for the federal government knowing they're not receiving a check, while elected officials on Capitol Hill over these 8 weeks were receiving checks, still maintain their medical coverage, weren't accumulating bills that they couldn't pay. This is why people find themselves disgusted with politicians. So to listen to them and to hear them disgusted at themselves is not a bad thing. Good. Hope you're stressed like living hell because you deserve what you brought upon the American people. Maybe you should taste some of it yourself. So let's just go down the list. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC on Schumer. Cut one, Griff. Play that for me, please.
Should Schumer stay as minority leader?
I think what is so important for folks to understand is that this problem is bigger than one person, and it actually is bigger than the minority leader in the Senate. You had 8 Senate Democrats who coordinated this, their own votes on this, as well as you have 2 retiring members. Many of them are also up in several cycles from now, with the hope that people are going to forget this moment. And I think what's important is that we understand that this is not just. A leader is reflected as a reflection of the party, and Senate Democrats have selected their leadership to represent them. And so the question needs to be bigger than just one person. We have several Senate primaries this cycle. I know I'm being asked about New York. That is years from now. I have to remind my own constituents because they think that this election is this year. We actually do have Senate elections this year. And my hope is that people across this country actually participate in their primary elections in selecting their leadership. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's a nice answer. We understand it, but that's much ado about nothing. She wants the Senate seat, and she should. And the likelihood is that if she ran against Chuck Schumer, she would beat him because he is his unpopularity has definitely grown. I can say that. And we understand that because he's being blamed for it because he couldn't keep people together. My whole point is this. If you have representatives from Pennsylvania, from Nevada, from New Hampshire, etc., okay, and their constituency their voters are really, really feeling the pinch. What, they're just supposed to go along with the other 39, 40 plus Democrats in the House and say, yo, we just gonna let our own constituency suffer over something like this, over people being fed, over people paying bills? That's what they're supposed to do? I don't get it. But Ro Khanna, Representative Ro Khanna, he didn't mince words. He didn't dance as much as AOC just did there. He was a bit more direct. Griff, play cut two.
You've called on Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer to step aside. You say he's no longer effective as a leader. Explain this for our viewers, because he did vote against this compromise that you oppose. Why are you mad at him?
Jake, you've covered politics a long time. Yes, he voted no, but eight senators who said they consulted him daily go and vote yes. One of those people is his number two. He's not going to do that without Senator Schumer's sign off. And then conveniently, all eight of those senators aren't up for re-election in 2026. This is the D.C. way. Senator Schumer could have blocked this if he had wanted to. And one of the challenges is, in addition to the health care premium spikes, it undermines the narrative that this was a Trump shutdown. If eight Democratic senators could have ended it, we should have kept the pressure on.
Did you hear that? They should have kept the pressure on. By not doing so, it gave depression and undermined the narrative that this was a Trump shutdown, which essentially is the Democrats admitting that the plan all along was to make this look like a Trump shutdown. Therefore, it could be politically expedient and they could gain traction and gain some favor with the voters out there with the midterms coming up. Because that's what this was about. Nobody's fooled here. And I'm not even saying it's a faulty strategy on the part of the Democrats. What I'm saying is, damn, what the hell were you doing to find another way? See, this is where I come back to. This is where Stephen A. Smith comes into play. Because what pisses me off to no end is that had you done your job prior to the election, this wouldn't have been necessary. Had you paid attention to the economy, had you paid attention to affordability, had you paid attention to safety in the streets, had you paid attention to our borders instead of having open borders, allowing Trump to make it look like we were being invaded, for crying out loud, because of the extreme with which he embellished illegal immigration being pervasive in this country. Had you focused on that and the real issues instead of focusing on woke culture and cancel culture and making sure everybody echoed the right pronouns and making sure everybody marched lockstep in parroting your speech, you'd have won the damn election. Had you made sure that Kamala Harris and the Democrats as a party wasn't able to circumvent the democratic process and actually went through a primary by getting Biden out of there when you knew he wasn't suited for four more years, instead of holding on for dear life until he had a debate on a June 27th, knowing that he would leave office 3 weeks later and it would be too late to have a primary so you could circumvent the democratic process, maybe you wouldn't be in this position. But you did it anyway. And now you want the American people to make up for your foolishness. You want the American people to sign off on that. Oh, now you will care about the Affordable Care Act. Now you care about the subsidies. Now you're paying attention to premium prices doubling come December 31st. Now you're paying attention to all of that, huh? How come you didn't do that before? How come you didn't focus on that before? This is what I'm talking about. I know the GOP's hands ain't clean in all of this. Mike Johnson delaying the process. Trump doing everything he can to create headlines everywhere else because he doesn't want us focusing on the Epstein files. We were born at night, not last night. You know what the hell is going on. But the Dems ain't innocent in all of this. Not by a damn sight. Speaking of the Epstein files, Representative Adelita Grijalva, she was a guest on the show. She was sworn in this afternoon. And she spoke about the Epstein files because ABC News came out with a story today linking Trump to the Epstein files because Jeffrey Epstein, seen during emails or via emails, essentially alluded to the fact that Trump knew about the girls, whatever that means, without specificity. Adelita Ruoholva spoke about that because obviously once she's sworn in, she's the final deciding vote for the Epstein files to be opened and essentially given to the public, supposedly. And here she is today on the House floor speaking about it. Griff, play cut five.
Just this morning, House Democrats released more emails showing that Trump knew more about Epstein's abuses than he previously acknowledged. It's past time for Congress to restore its role as a check and balance on this administration and fight for we, the American people. We need to fight for our immigrant communities and veterans. We need to stand up for our public schools, children, and educators. We need to respect tribal sovereignty and our environment. We need to stand up for LGBTQ plus rights because that's what the American people expect us to do. Fight for them. That is why I will sign the discharge petition right now to release the Epstein files.
Y'all cool with that? I have no problem with the Epstein files being exposed. I think anybody who's done what Jeffrey Epstein did should be thrown under the damn jail. They should spend the rest of their natural born life in prison if he was alive to do it. Young girls being sexually molested is as disgusting as it gets. It is as vile as it gets. We ain't making any excuses for anybody like that. What a despicable, despicable human being. There's a special place in hell for people like that. But that's not what anybody can definitively associate the president with. He knew Epstein, so did Bill Clinton. So did a plethora of other famous people inside and outside the world of politics. Incriminating emails, well, what specifically and how significant was it? And when we sit up there as Democrats and we're applauding on the House floor, now that Adelita Grijalva was there talking about she'll be the final vote to sit up there and open the Epstein files, and everybody's applauding for the Democratic Party. Ladies and gentlemen, keep in mind that the Epstein files were in existence and free to have been opened during the Biden administration. You were there for 4 years. How come you didn't open it as a Democratic Party then? What am I missing? I'm not saying I know. It's a legitimate question. Maybe I don't remember the answer. Maybe my extraordinary producers should be able to help me during the commercial break. But from my understanding, the same files that were opened or being open now with the 220 pages of documents or whatever it is, with various emails, that could have been done when Biden was in office. Well, why didn't you do it? If it's so important now, what were the Democrats doing at that particular moment in time? See? This is the kind of stuff that smells. Because my attitude is, just deducing how much they despise Trump is, if there was some real bona fide dirt on them, since you went after him with the 34 felony convictions, which essentially was deduced to him paying hush money to Stormy Daniels, a porn star, just so she wouldn't reveal their happenings with one another leading up to the election in 2016, okay? If you had something like that you were willing to parade him through the streets with, of course, if you had something on him about Epstein, you'd have let it go earlier to make sure he didn't become the 47th president. That's just my thinking from a logical perspective. But what do I know? Either way you slice it, when that kind of stuff is going on, all it does is foster the continual divide that is inevitably going to exist.
One side hates each other so much that neither side is willing to negotiate and work with one another until desperate times means desperate measures. And the American people are the ones that suffer first, and they're the ones that suffer the most before the residual collateral impact is truly, truly felt. That's the damn problem. And even with the end of this shutdown taking place, I still find myself thinking more of the same, ain't nothing new. A continual resolution likely be reached, be signed, shutdown will probably end, it's going to end today. And as a result, okay, the government will be financed through the end of January. Let's get through the holidays. At least this ain't going on during Thanksgiving. At least this ain't going on through Christmas. At least this ain't going on through New Year's Eve. And we'll go into the New Year's, and then we can be the same old sorry ass as we've been. At the expense of the American people. That's 866-96-POTUS. Up next, Democratic representative from Pennsylvania, Madeleine Dean, will be on with us. I think for a second y'all should go to break before I cut somebody out, because I'm really in that kind of mood. Back with more Straight Shooter with Stephen A. in a minute. Past hour number one, back here on Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Smith, coming at you. I love to do every Wednesday night from 6 to 8 p.m. over the airwaves of Sirius XM, POTUS Radio, Channel 124. My guest represents Pennsylvania's 4th Congressional District. She serves on the House Appropriations and Foreign Affairs Committee. Please welcome Democratic Congresswoman Madeleine Dean to the show as we speak. Representative Dean, how are you? How's everything going?
Fine. I'm here in D.C.
All right. It's good to see you. I've seen you. Obviously, we were on stage for, you know, for News Nation a few weeks ago, and I've had the pleasure of talking to you on several occasions. So thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on the show. So the shutdown is coming. The shutdown is coming to an end. How are you feeling about it?
A mixture of feelings. Very disappointed with the Senate. Frustrated with the Senate, especially the vehicle they sent over. It is hideous, absolutely hideous. But on the other side of that, I am so proud of the American public. I'm proud of my Democratic caucus that we made the case to the American people that this is about the affordability of their health care, their access to health care, and can they pay the premiums to keep themselves and their kids covered or not. And they see on the other side of the ledger that the Republicans don't give a damn that they're about to be priced out of health care and they're going to have lousy health outcomes. So on the one case, I'm heartened that we were able to take this to the American people last Tuesday, or I guess it's a little more than a week now, Tuesday's election across the country, including in our very own Pennsylvania, showed that people have absolutely had it with this grotesque administration, its selfishness and corruption, and its callousness around SNAP and care and affordability.
Representative Dean, you talked about the Senate version and you used the word hideous. Explain specifically to my audience what was so hideous about it. Explain exactly what your problem is with what the Senate proposed.
Well, the Senate is sending us back, and we just wrote it on the rule on this. They sent us back a continuing resolution, which is a Band-Aid budget, which continues the cuts to SNAP, for example, does nothing to undo the cuts to Medicaid and Medicare that were part of the big, beautiful bill. And it continues the cuts to SNAP. That's what people, I think, don't know, that in the big, beautiful bill, so-called, they cut $186 billion to SNAP. $186 billion. That's $18 billion every single year for the next 10 years. They're wiping out of SNAP intentionally. And so it does nothing to correct that. But what was slipped in at the last minute, and I took time today to be sure to read it. I commend it to anybody who has an interest.
Send it to me. I have an interest. I have an interest. Please send it to me. I'll put it over the airwaves. Please.
Put it on the airwaves. Page 223 and beyond. Do you know they slipped into this bill a private cause of action for the 8 senators who were lawfully investigated in terms of their phone records around the January 6th insurrection? It's a cause of action to line their pockets, $500,000 per count. So you could claim 8, 7, 9, 10 counts. You could get $5 million. Sitting senators voted for this, page 223 and beyond. So that was slipped in at the last moment. And two questions I'd like answered is, did the 8 Democrats who voted yes to get this over to us and to reopen the government, which is important to do, did they know about this corrupt provision that was put in here, especially written for these 8 senators, 8 Republican senators? And then why didn't the 8 Republican senators recuse themselves? Because they stand to profit from this. There's a conflict of interest when you vote for a bill that includes something to give you a benefit. It's so corrupt. It is so hideous. And I've tried to make the case to my Republican colleagues, even if you liked this continuing resolution, once you saw that late night addition to line the pockets of these senators, why don't you just vote no? Say, no, we're not going to do that. Strip that out.
Representative Dean right here with Stephen A. on Straight Shooter with Stephen A. 7 Democrats, 1 independent, joined Republicans to fund the government until late January, as we just discussed. Obviously, there's a lot of Democrats that have a problem with this. Did Democrats let the American people down, in your estimation, those Democrats who decided to go with this? I understand your point about what did they know, because if they knew about that provision that you just pointed out on that page, obviously that's incredibly egregious and they should be held to account for that. But if they didn't know, and they just decided that there's American people that are suffering, the holidays are approaching, Thanksgiving, Christmas, they're not getting paychecks, and they've got their own constituents to answer to, what's the crime in them crossing? I don't want to say a picket line, because it's not a picket line, but you know what I'm saying, figuratively speaking, going up against their fellow Democrats to push this through. What do you say to that?
Well, I say they know now. For example, we saw Lindsey Graham publicly say he's going to make a claim. Good for you, Lindsey, Senator. You're going to make a claim. You just voted for, as I say, a winning lottery ticket for yourself. Grotesque. But I have understanding and empathy, and I'm not in their shoes. I'm not in the Senate. I'm over here in the House. I didn't have to suffer through 14 votes. And I'm talking to my constituents all the time who are extremely worried, whether it is about government workers not being paid, my own coworkers here not being paid this whole time. I met with ATF. I met with air traffic controllers, one from Reading Tower and one from Philadelphia Tower. They're horrified. They're embarrassed. Pilots are buying them dinners. That's not what they want. They're required to do their work. They are required to work as many as six days in a row, 10 hours a day, and they're so proud of their work. So for the senators who say, we had to reopen this government, we had to get people paid, we had to get the money flowing to SNAP again. SNAP never should have dried up. That's a complete illegal move on the part of the administration. I have empathy and understanding for what they were arguing for, but I think I wish they had held on. And I'll tell you the barometer that I go by over the course of this weekend, including Veterans Day yesterday, my district office had dozens of calls and people saying to me, my constituents saying to me, continue the fight. You're absolutely on the right side of this. We are about to be priced out of our health care. And the callous nature of the president throwing a Great Gatsby party while people are standing in food lines They get it, well, and they wanted us to continue the fight.
We could be here all day for the next 2 years lamenting the behavior of the president when it comes to issues like this, being on a golf course while stuff like this is happening, renovating parts of the White House while stuff like this is happening, calling for his name to be, to be the new name of a stadium being built in the nation. Don't get me started with that stuff, because we wouldn't have enough time. But I will ask you this. Though I want to ask you about the culpability on the part of the Democratic Party in this regard. Healthcare is obviously extremely important. We get that and we understand it. But when the GOP makes the argument, Affordable Care Act subsidies, it's going to cost in excess of additional $1.5 trillion. This stuff is not sustainable to the American people. It's going to be too costly, et cetera, et cetera. As a Democrat, what do you say to that? Since obviously it is Obamacare that we're talking about, and it's something that the Democrats have supported. Nevertheless, the price of it has exceeded expectations, at least according to the other side. What do you say to that?
Well, that they're not doing the math. The math is right in front of our faces. For example, we know that to continue the Obamacare discounts, premium discounts, for a single year is approximately $35 billion. That's a lot of money, no doubt about it. But you know what they offered and gave in a permanent fashion to the wealthiest among us? Tax cuts, tax credits for the wealthiest among us, costing $350 billion a year. One-tenth that amount is what it is to keep millions of people affording their health care, accessing health care. 10 times that amount was the giveaway and the blowing up of the deficit, $350 billion a year, $3.5 trillion over 10 years. So they just got to do the math. And these budgets are statements of our values. Their statement is, we value blowing up the deficit to give tax credits to the wealthiest, and we do not value making sure you can access healthcare.
Representative Madeleine Dean right here with Stephen A. Straight Shooter right here on POTUS Radio. One of the people taking major, major hits is Chuck Schumer, the Senate Minority Leader. There are people calling for him to be gone. Where do you stand on all of that, may I ask? The Democratic Party calling for him to be gone. That's why I ask.
I've actually said, I don't usually talk about what I say in caucus, but I will say what I said in caucus because these are my words. We shouldn't waste 1 minute Democrats shooting at Democrats. We have found success in our messaging because our values are leading us. So I'm not going to spend 1 minute talking about what should happen over on the Senate side. I'm a member of the House. The Senate needs to take care of itself.
Let me ask you this about you and Mr. John Fetterman, a fellow representative, fellow senator from the state of Pennsylvania. Have you spoken to him? Because obviously he was willing, to cross party lines as a senator and put his vote forward to, end the shutdown. That's a different position than yourself, obviously. Have you had any conversations with him, and what has that been like?
Well, thank you for asking. I don't know if you knew this, Stephen, but I ran against him for lieutenant governor back in 2018.
I didn't know that. Yes.
Yeah, and it was a heck of a run. We wound up really, it's strange to say this as opponents, but we struck up quite a friendship. And you can imagine the look of us, I'm 5'4" and he's 6' yes. forever.
Yes.
But we struck up quite a friendship. I will say that I have tried to talk to him through this CR issue, and he has not returned my calls on it. So I disagree with his vote. I don't understand it. And I called him and literally left him a message just to say, John, here's how I'm voting and here's why I'm voting this way, the way I see it from the other side of this Capitol on behalf of my constituents in the 4th. I just wanted to share these ideas with you. He didn't return my call, but he has spoken publicly about his vote. I disagree with his vote.
You know, I'm not supposed to admit this over the airwaves, but I will anyway. I genuinely like you. I mean, I've met you on a couple of occasions, and you know, I just love your passion. I love your knowledge. I love the fact that you don't pull punches. You know, and even though I pride myself in being a middle of the road guy, you know, I found myself increasingly disgusted with Democrats leading up to the election. And I said, damn it, if I knew her and I spoke to her more, I'd feel a lot better about the Democrats. I need to talk to her more because you don't disgust me the way some of the folks on the left and the right have disgusted me. I must ask you, however, I'm just wondering now.
Heck of a compliment.
Well, you're worthy of it. You deserve it because you don't pull any punches. You're no nonsense. You know what the hell you're talking about. I got to give you credit where credit is due. But I must ask, as we reflect on everything that has transpired with this whole shutdown, I can't help but rewind to the election of 2024 and ask myself, if the Democrats had focused on issues like healthcare, affordability, safety in the streets, the economy, I'm talking about focusing on it. I'm not talking about mentioning it. I'm talking about focusing on it. I think that he would not have been able to win the election if that was a focal point instead of woke culture, cancel culture, et cetera. Now that we are here, what's your mentality moving forward and how are you feeling about the state of the Democratic Party as the 2026 election draws a year away?
I'm not the top strategist in D.C. or in Pennsylvania, but you're absolutely right. If we had kept it simpler, we thought we were making the right arguments. I was super proud of the massive pieces of legislation that are making a difference across this country, whether it's infrastructure or Safer Communities Act, the Inflation Reduction Act, the American Rescue Plan. I had fun talking to people about these things, but guess what? It wasn't resonating. And so what we should have done, and we've learned that lesson, and great candidates in Virginia, in New York City, New Jersey, taught us, keep it simple. This is about how can I afford my lifestyle? How can I afford to put food on the table? How can I afford to get a mortgage, pay my rent, educate my kids? If we stay with that, the other things will come to us because I have tried to say it's about health in three ways. It's your economic health, it's your physical and mental health. And I think you know I care an awful lot about mental health,
absolutely,
addiction, and those issues. But it's also our civic health. So I hope we've learned a real lesson. I feel a lift from the election of Tuesday, from California's Prop 50 through the East Coast and through what happened in Pennsylvania. The results in Pennsylvania are terrific. The retention of the Supreme Court justices. You saw some of the Bucks County races that were historic wins for Democrats. So I feel very good about it. You're right. 2024, we maybe complicated the issue way too much.
Well, Representative Dee, how are we to feel as American citizens when we hear the manner in which you might talk about the other side, as justified as you may be? When we look at it and we say, how will anything ever get done? Because I'm thinking about the shutdown that took place and I'm saying, okay, from a strategic perspective, you hold out, you fight the fight. You heard Democrats all over the place talking about leverage, but you knew Trump wasn't going to budge. Trump's been after the Affordable Care Act since 2014, 2 years before he even came to office. He's been after it. So you knew he wasn't going to budge. How long were the Democrats willing to sit out and allow a shutdown to continue moving forward, knowing this man and the GOP were not going to budge because he has them doing whatever he wants them to do for the most part? I think we all see that.
I don't have an answer. I don't know how long we would have held on, but we did see, I think, a referendum on the arguments we were making and on how people are feeling about their own economic lives, but about the horror that is this administration. When the president held the Gatsby party the night before SNAP was to dry up, and by the way, that was illegal. I think there's been a movement by Republican members to say SNAP dried up because the government shut down and they try to blame us. So there's a couple fallacies in there. They're in control of everything. They shut the damn place down because they couldn't govern. And SNAP did not dry up. because of a government shutdown. It dried up because the administration went to court to try to not pay SNAP benefits. My constituents, Republican constituents, that was beyond the pale for them, absolutely beyond the pale, that this president would have grotesque parties, Gatsby themed. Obviously, Stephen, he never read Great Gatsby. It doesn't end well for those folks. And he denied food to children, to veterans, to seniors. That is what went beyond the pale for my constituents.
Representative Dean, going back to your point about how senators snooped on by Jack Smith could seek up to $500,000 and what have you. Going back to that, I'm just looking at it and I'm looking at some of these stories. Senate Democratic leadership aide defended the decision to include the provision saying, quote, this protects the institution and senators from an out of control Pam Bondi run Department of Justice. I'm wondering, in your thoughts, I'm interested in knowing your thoughts about how this may protect Democratic senators from an out of control Pam Bondi in the future as well. I want to know your thoughts about that.
Of course, this is not about Pam Bondi. This is about January the 6th. These guys are trying to line their pockets because they're upset that their phone records were lawfully subpoenaed. You know, some of these things were as a result of grand juries. This is by the book, the rule of law. If there's nothing to see here, what are you suing about? If you did not participate in any way with the incitement to insurrection and the actual insurrection, then you've got nothing to worry about. And I'm going to send you this language or highlight it for you. We'll email it over. Please, because it's $500,000 per instance.
Per instance.
So a senator might say, here are 10 instances that I am claiming. And you know what else is very cynical in the way that it has been written? It is the higher of either your actual harm. So let's say somebody actually proved $10,000 worth of harm, which they're not going to be able to do. Or the higher of $10,000 or $500,000. So if I'm that senator and I make my claim and I'm able to prove $10,000, guess what? I get $500,000. That's the way they wrote it. The higher of, not your actual harm, the higher of. What? And of course, what they have happened is settle these things now without any kind of investigation. They want to just settle, line their pockets, take this money from the Treasury, from taxpayers like you and me and anybody listening, line their pockets. And then Donald Trump's going to say, there's the precedent. Please pay me my $230 million settlement.
I'm wondering whether or not this is going to assist in stopping the weaponization of the DOJ, but that remains to be seen. Before I let you get on out of here, one last question. And I'm not saying that's going to happen. I was just wondering about it. But having said that, where do you go from here, considering how depressing this looks on the side of the Democrats, pointing out some of the things that you've pointed out in this CR right now? Where does the Democratic Party go from here in light of this shutdown coming to an end?
This may sound foolhardy on my part, but I sat on the floor just now as the bill and the rule was being argued. And I kept thinking to myself, the time is always right to do what is right. So for these Republican members, it is not too late to separate yourself from the hideousness of this continuing resolution with this corrosive, corrupt pocket lining for special 8 Republican senators. It's not too late to separate yourself and say, I don't want to be known for all of history to have been a part of this grotesque corruption and a tearing down of what we should be able to count on as the rule of law. It is not too late. I don't know what it's going to take, but I do know that my caucus, and I in particular, am really heartened, because we're going to go into this new year, as disheartening as it is here in D.C., with the lies and false arguments that Republicans are willing to make publicly on the floor and to their constituents and to the media. I am heartened. My constituents get it. And I'm hearing from people also beyond my own constituency. They get it. They want us to keep up this fight so that we can actually reclaim the arguments around affordability and actually make lives better for the common good, not for the super wealthy and the super connected and the super loyal to this president. I believe, sadly, I believe this is going to fall in on the president. Mm. He surrounded himself with sycophants and weak people who really can't stand on their own. Mm-hmm. Their claim to power is based on loyalty to this president. And they like that connection. This is going to collapse in on itself. And we didn't even talk yet about the Epstein files.
Why? We didn't even have to, because we don't have to, because we know how bad that is. So, as a matter of fact, I'm one of those people that believes we've seen a whole bunch of news about a whole bunch of things coming out of the administration just to distract us from the Epstein files. That's just my opinion, but I'll save that for another day. Representative Dean, we have to get on out of here. 4th Congressional District, Pennsylvania. State of Pennsylvania, Congresswoman Madeline Dean.
Can I just pay you a compliment?
Yes, ma'am.
Since you paid me a pretty funny compliment that what was the word you used? I forget the word you used.
I'm trying to remember.
You didn't hate me or whatever.
That's,
I don't know.
Right.
When you walked off stage the other day, I said, I like this guy. He's had it with this conversation.
I have. Honored to talk to you. Yep. Thank you so much for your time. It's wonderful talking to
you.
Thank you. You're always welcome back anytime. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me. Take care.
Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Back with more in a minute. 676-887. That's 866-967. 6887. 866-96 POTUS. You're listening live to Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Oh, that was a very, very interesting interview with Madeline Dean, representative out of the 4th Congressional District from the state of Pennsylvania. She seems like a straight shooter. No nonsense. And I like that. Whatever she feels, she feels. She's not playing games. And she talked about how hideous, and that's the word that she used to describe the Senate and what they were proposing and some of the things that they had in the bill. And there's certainly something to investigate when senators are able to sue for $500,000, up to $500,000 per case for anything that was exacted against them. This is that's taxpayer money. That's taxpayer money. What the hell is going on? This is why they become politicians after them. Because, I mean, it's a racket. What pisses the American people off? Think about that. I'm not condoning or justifying the insurrection, because it was an insurrection. This is the kind of nonsense that we're hearing about that leads to stuff like that happening, playing with the lives of American people. Hour number two up next. Stephanie Ruhle from MSNBC, soon to be called MS Now. She's up next. Don't go away. Welcome back to Straight Shooter. My guest hosts the 11th hour on MSNBC, which will now become MS Now in a network rebrand on Saturday, November 15th. Please welcome Emmy Award-winning journalist Stephanie Ruhle to the show. Stephanie, how are you? How's everything?
Fantastic. Great to be here.
And first of all, thank you so much. I'm honored to have you. And thank you for being on the show, because I had the pleasure of being on your show. I enjoyed myself very, very much that when I was on the show. I hope I do as good of a job as you did interviewing me. How about that?
Well, we'll soon find out.
That's right. Absolutely. MS Now, what does it stand for? And what do you feel about the rebrand?
I feel great about it. Right? I feel great about what we're making right now. Important news. Everything we make, we're trying to help people get better and smarter. Mm-hmm. And so any panic that people have, oh, the name's changing, are people going to find you? I don't think it's about that, right? My sons are huge Stephen A. fans, right? They watch everything you do. But if I said to them, think fast, what's the name of his YouTube show? I'm not sure they'd know the name, but they know exactly where to find you because you're their trusted voice. Mm. And I know that that's what we are. That's what I am with my audience.
That's what you are. And that's what you are with your audience, and I have no doubt about that. But we're talking about the network itself, not just you. Any concern at all with all the brouhaha that involved MSNBC that the rebrand is going to be a challenge for anybody associated with the rebrand because of the things that were happening leading up to the election with MSNBC?
I think for anybody who's dependent or reliant on the status quo of anything at MS or NBC or anywhere, then you must not be that good. Mm. If you're talented, then you should welcome a shakeup. Mm. What happens when a shakeup happens? The people who are on top, well, they could lose that position. Or the dead wood hiding under the bottom, they're going to get exposed. Mm. But if you make something great, if you believe in what you do, you should welcome a shakeup. Right? For us, a rebrand means a reinvestment. Mm-hmm. And there's not that many traditional media companies getting a reinvestment right now, and we are.
A reinvestment, does that also mean a change in what you used to be compared to what you will be?
No, it means we're taking a look at what we make and we're saying, how do we make it better and smarter? Mm. Right? Think about news at MS, we bring in different reporters from different organizations every day, right? If you said to me a year and a half ago, what's going on at Wired Magazine? I'd say, I don't know. I've never subscribed to Wired Magazine. Trump wins. Doge and Elon Musk becomes the most important story. And that team was the number one reporters on Doge. We had those reporters in every day, mm-hmm. as opposed to here's the set group of people that you have, a correspondent who we're going to send to Chicago today to cover a teacher strike and North Dakota tomorrow because of a tornado. No, mm-hmm. we're going to have specialized people that are the best at what they do, analyzing the news, because people need to be informed and engaged. That's the most important thing we need to be. The risk to us is that people disconnect. Mm-hmm. And that's not the risk just to me, to all of us. In this moment of misinformation, I get why people are saying, I don't want to listen, I want to tune out, and they can't. If you care about, everybody out there wants to be physically safe, financially secure, socially free. If you want those things, and you want to make sure this country we live in is only getting better and stronger, you must be informed and engaged.
Do you feel, with the rebrand, MS Now, when we think about it, should we look at a leftist-leaning a broadcast? Should we see it as completely objective and neutral, irregardless of who's in office, what side you're taking, anything? How should MS Now be viewed moving forward?
As a smart organization that covers the truth. I think this idea that people are searching to cover the fictional middle, I think the middle is fiction. The truth is just the truth. Mm-hmm. And we're going to cover the truth and then analyze it. And someone could say, but you sound so leftist. You're going after the president. I'm not going after the president. We're covering the truth. Mm-hmm. Right? Every day, I'm covering the economy. Mm-hmm. Okay? That's my background. I spent 15 years of my life in investment banking. Mm-hmm. I worked at Bloomberg. Then I came to NBC, MSNBC. And what did we learn? In 2016, when Donald Trump got elected, I don't think he was elected on cultural issues. I think he was elected on the economy. Right? Mm-hmm. That's how Joe Biden got elected, because people were coming out of COVID. They weren't happy with how Donald Trump was handling things. And Joe Biden got elected. Fast forward, this last presidential election, people were unhappy with inflation. They were unhappy with the way the Biden White House was handling inflation, and Trump won. Mm-hmm. Fast forward to 1 week ago, what did people vote on in New York, in New Jersey, in Virginia? Affordability. Mm-hmm. And so that's not being biased. That's going to the voters where they are, understanding business, how it operates in this country. Mm-hmm. And if that means that you're being critical of the people in power and that person's Donald Trump, well, then you could say that's bias, but it's simply covering the truth.
Well, I vibe with that. I totally agree with you with that. And I think that when it comes to your show, The 11th Hour, I think that you epitomize that. But the reality is that there were others on the channel that you worked on that people would say that was not the case. They didn't think that that was the case at all. They looked at it and they said they weren't talking about affordability. They weren't talking about safety in the streets. They weren't talking about the economy. They were engaged in woke culture and cancel culture and things of that nature. And that's what they were focused on, which they believe assisted the left strongly and alienated so many people on the right that contributed to the left ultimately losing the election. Well, what do you say to that?
Well, Stephen A., I'm not the president of a network. I'm not the manager of a network. I'm an anchor of a TV show. Mm-hmm. I am so proud of every colleague that I work with. I'm proud of every person that I bring on my show. And for me, every person that I bring on my show, I respect. And they respect me. Mm-hmm. And I think decency is the basis of everything that we make. And I love being part of MS. Can I speak about every segment, everything everybody else has done? No, just like you can at ESPN.
Correct.
I control the hour of television that I anchor and every minute of television that I do on other people's shows. And there's not a show that I wouldn't go on our network. And I'm proud to be here.
So the 11th hour is not going to be any different than what it was. I'm not saying it should be. Please don't get me wrong. I just want to make sure I'm establishing a level of consistency.
Let's hope it's better.
Right there. Is it going to be the same, just better? Is it going to be completely different? Different now to this MS Now? What's going to be different about what people were accustomed to seeing from Stephanie Ruhle in the 11th hour, if anything at all?
I think it's going to be better only because the news is coming to us. The most important thing to the American voter is the economy. That's what we cover, and we're going to focus on it more than ever. Mm.
Let me switch gears and ask you about it, because obviously the shutdown is coming to an end, and far be it for us to ignore that. Yet here we are, we see Democrats going at one another because several of them, obviously, it's almost like crossing a picket line, for crying out loud. I mean, like, how dare you side with the Republicans, the 53 Republicans, and give them the 60 votes necessary in order to make sure this continual resolution goes through. What are your thoughts about the infighting that appears to be going on right now, where you've got Ro Khanna, Representative Ro Khanna, Governor Gavin Newsom calling the Democrats pathetic, that crossed Ro Khanna saying Chuck Schumer needs to go. Others speculating about such things. Your thoughts about this shutdown coming to an end and a role the Democrats who sided with the GOP played in it coming to an end.
Now, I am not a political analyst, and how far their infighting goes in a complicated big tent party, I don't know.
Okay.
But I would make this argument about the 8 Democrats and potentially the House now voting to reopen the government. Okay. The sticking point this whole time has been about Obamacare subsidies. At the beginning of the shutdown, Republicans tried to say, nobody's health care is getting more expensive. This is because Democrats want illegal immigrants to get free health care. That was never true, okay? And Democrats continued on their messaging, continued to explain to the American people, this is not about illegal immigrants going to the emergency room or getting free health care. Federal government isn't giving them that. This is about Obamacare with all of its flaws. And I will argue to you, loads of flaws, clunky, cost too much money. There is not another alternative. They were keeping the government shut down because the Obamacare subsidies were not getting extended and millions of people would suffer. Now, over these 8 weeks, while the government has shut down, many others have suffered as well. The fact that SNAP benefits have been in question, one in every eight Americans. And this White House, this president, fought to the Supreme Court, was appealing to ensure that we weren't going to renew those SNAP benefits. It was Michael Che from SNL who said it a week ago. People can have their differences. People can monetize the divide. But can't we come together on feeding the poor? So whether it's all the problems with air traffic controllers or SNAP benefits, some Democrats said, we're going to vote to reopen the government. And then come January, December 31st is when these Obamacare subsidies expire. Come January, we're going to revisit this and vote on it. Now, when and if that happens, if Republicans don't work with Democrats and find a solution, it will be squarely on their heads. And all of the American people will know it was the Republicans that made the decision not to help you with extending those Obamacare subsidies. And that will be difficult for them come the midterms, which is, you know, less than 400 days away.
Obviously, it'll be difficult for them. And I don't blame you. I don't disagree with you about that either. The flip side to it is, what about the GOP who talks about those Affordable Care Act subsidies? What about them talking about how the fact that a continual resolution was signed 14 separate occasions when Biden was in office? But when Trump was in office first term, that's when the shutdown took place. Again, Trump is in office again, a shutdown takes place. And they're looking at this hatred for Donald Trump as they want to proclaim it is as motivation for the Democrats, because the Democrats are saying, hey, this is the one time that we have this leverage to address this issue. The Affordable Care Act, the Republicans have always been against that. The Democrats were for it. Obviously, the cost of Obamacare was far more excessive than Obama had originally said it would be. It was speculated to be over $900 million. It's exceeded beyond $1.3 trillion. Now you're talking about additional $1.5 trillion. This is them talking, not me. They're saying these kind of things, and they're saying at some point in time, you've got to curb the spending. You've got to address it. And what the Democrats are wanting is basically having the Affordable Care Act, which is non-sustainable, to continue to be subsidized at the detriment of the American people.
So
is that
great.
Not a plausible
so
argument
great.
To make?
So you know what I say to all of them? Then work together.
I agree.
The only reason we're having a shutdown is because none of them can work together. You and I work in private business, okay? Yeah. If we worked at the same company and we didn't get along, you think that we could say, well, I'm not going to come to work for 8 weeks. I'm going to sit in my house and roll up my sleeves. No, we don't get that. This is why the American people don't trust the government.
Exactly.
Because we've gotten to a place, you know, years and years ago, members of Congress moved their families to Washington. Mm. So you could fight all day on the Hill. And when you leave work, your kids are playing on the same sports teams. You're going to the same Stop and Shop. Civility and decency existed.
Totally agree.
Now, nobody moves to D.C., so they go on TV, they kick each other, they punch each other, they talk a bad game, and they don't work together. That right there is why the American people, regardless of the political party, have such a low opinion of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I hear you, all the flaws in Obamacare, and I hear you that Republicans don't like it. So great, giddy up, boys. What's your solution? Mm-hmm. They have offered a grand total of nothing. Donald Trump has been dumping on Obamacare since the day he started, since the day he became a politician. And the only thing
since 2014.
The only thing we have heard from him is concepts of a new plan. Bring on the plan. A nerd like me can't wait to read it.
Mm. Stephanie Ruhle right here. I got to ask you this. Having said all of that, where do the Democrats go from here? Now that the shutdown is coming to an end. And obviously, you got to go back. You know, I know there's a negotiation. They're asking for roll calls and all of this stuff. Who's going to vote for? Who's going to vote against? We get all of that part. But how do you see things unfolding over the next few months in light of what just transpired?
What Democrats need to do more than just in the next few months, but the lesson learned in this last election, connect with your voters. Abigail Spanberger winning in Virginia. Mm-hmm. Mikey Sherrill winning in New Jersey. Zoran Mondani winning in New York. I don't know that any of them would have won those elections if they were... Mondani wouldn't have won in Virginia, and I don't know that Abigail Spanberger would have won here. The thing that every Democrat and lawmaker needs to do, you're watching Marjorie Taylor Greene do it. Get your brain out of Washington and out of your party and out of your talking points and connect with your voters and see what they want and they need and try to solve for that.
Do you believe that Mondani winning the mayoral seat in New York City is something that can mushroom into something bigger, that it could get to a point where you could see socialists in the United States of America winning general elections? Do you think that that's something that's plausible and possible down the road in the immediate future?
I think that Zoran Mondani created a movement in the same way that Donald Trump did. I think if you closed your eyes and you said, how did this person build this campaign? How did they connect with people? What did people see in them? It's very similar. They both connected to people who felt left out, who felt like we lived in a country or in a city that worked for the wealthy and didn't work for the poor. And they felt like they didn't have a voice. Now, how those two, and they did it outside the system. They did it outside the establishment. I mean, look at the amount of small dollar donors that Donald Trump won over when he won in 2016. And look at the amount, over 100,000 volunteers Zoran Mondani created for himself in New York, literally coming from nothing. So I think both of them teach their parties a political lesson about where the country is and how people want to shake up when it comes to the establishment. Now, somebody winning in New York, I don't think you can possibly compare it to anywhere else in the world because New York, it's like nowhere.
I agree. But I'm asking you not just as somebody who knows what the hell she's talking about, by the way. I'm asking you as a finance person. I'm asking you as somebody who hosts a show, you know, on national television. I'm asking you somebody that has the pulse of the people to a strong degree, okay? That would be you, Stephanie. I got to ask you, again, it's one thing to have this populist movement in New York City. It's another thing entirely for people as the midterms approach in 2026, as a general election is approaching in 2028 that it's expected not to include Donald Trump, unless he's able to circumvent the 22nd Amendment and run for a third term, which I believe he absolutely would do if he could. Taking those things into consideration, do you see a country that is the United States of America ever embracing on a broader basis the kind of stuff Mondani is proposing?
Mondani won a week ago. We haven't seen him do anything yet, so I think it's too soon to tell.
Got it.
Now, I think that New York City, part of what New York City has made it great is our extraordinary business community? Absolutely. New York is the most philanthropic city in the country. It might be in the world. Do I think that once Mondani is in office, is he going to find his path to work with the business community and create solutions for this town? Listen, he won, but he's not going to get his plans done unless he can truly pull the city, not all the city up, but pull the city together. So I just think it remains to be seen. Mm. But he's not the first person to win who has less traditional establishment views. We'll soon find out.
Sorry for me to backtrack, but I'm just curious because I never had the pleasure or the fortune enough to ask you this question. Why do you believe the Democrats lost the election in 2024? Why do you believe they lost? What did the Democrats do wrong then that they may or may not be doing now?
I think it's always about the economy. I truly do. I mean, I think people remained struggling after COVID and, you know, sort of the impact. And I don't mean to get wonky with you about the K economy. And the K economy is that the rich got richer and the poor got poorer. And that doesn't just hurt you financially, it hurts you emotionally.
Yeah.
Watching it, feeling it. And people were unhappy with that status quo. And they said, it's so crazy, it just might work. And listen, Donald Trump, you could love him or you can hate him. You know, I just said this recently and people really came after me and I stand by it. He is a skilled politician.
Mm-hmm.
That does not mean he's a good guy,
mm-hmm.
but he has an ability to connect with people and speak to them in a direct way. And they say, I'm going to go for it. But it doesn't mean that people are going to stay with you forever, right? I was just reading something the other day. It was a headline of Joe Rogan, deep ally of Donald Trump, turning on him. I'm like, what are we talking about? Why do we have to categorize everyone as just because you could sit on a set with Bill O'Reilly? Oh,
yes.
Are we going to trust Stephen A?
Right.
Why can't people have a point of view and an open mind? I don't think most people are rooted in deep ideology. Mm-hmm. I think most of us are similar, right? I said that to you before. People are trying to take care of their families. They care about their neighbors. They want to be financially secure. They want to be socially free. I don't think most people are tied to an ideology. I think the current climate keeps pushing us there, right? Think about the news. People cover important, great reporters at all different organizations cover important news every single day. But you know what happens? The fringiest, most incendiary things, that's what gets clipped. That's what the algorithm picks up. And then the algorithm churns it out and churns it out and churns it out. And that's what people think the news is.
Mm.
Most people aren't that fired up and angry. Most people are good and they're trying to just get by. So this idea that people are all in for Trump or they're all in for Democrats, they're not.
Well, the reason why people think like that is because we live in a binary system. You got to pick one side or the other. That's the problem when it
but
comes to-
But you can change your mind.
You can change your mind. Well, listen, absolutely. We're both open-minded people. So you know what? The facts will tell us something. We say, look, that makes sense. I'm going to flow with that. The problem is we live in a system rake through the coals with these politicians, and you got to pick one side or the other. And sometimes you're picking a side where there's a whole bunch of stuff that you don't like about them. But it's even more that you don't like about the other side.
Absolutely.
And then we're stuck embracing stuff that we don't even want because we don't have a real alternative. Having said all of that, as we move forward, Stephanie, I have to ask you this. Trump and the tariffs. We talk about the economy. I'd be remiss in neglecting to ask you about that because you have some people that look at us, you know, listen to him. We're doing great. What are you talking about?
That's nonsense.
And I don't feel like we're doing great. What is the state of our economy right now as we speak? And what role are the tariffs playing in how we're doing right now?
Donald Trump has loved tariffs for years and years.
That's true.
Because tariffs make him a kingmaker, right? He doesn't have to get he's not getting Congress to weigh in. Tariffs are a way he can say, I pick you, I don't pick you, right? And tariffs are a tool that one should use. Remember, when Donald Trump was first on the political scene, do you know what he did? He tore up what was known as the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Obama, United States, and a group of our other allies were working together because China is a bad actor and they have unfair trade practices that we need to take on. Trump didn't want to do that. We wanted to go with this alone, but instead says, we're going to tariff the whole world because of unfair trade practices. Madagascar, look at our deficit. Madagascar, of course, we're going to buy more from them. They're the only ones who make vanilla. What are they going to buy from us? Right? And so now this is before the Supreme Court because Trump didn't use Congress and he's argued, I did this for emergency reasons. Mm. Really? We don't have a trade deficit with Brazil. Right. And now suddenly people are paying more for coffee. So you have Trump in a position that the Supreme Court now might vote down these tariffs. And if they do, the government's going to have to give the money back. Goldman Sachs estimates it's between $115 and $145 billion that the government will now have to give back, but not to the American people, to American businesses. So it's not even going to go to you and me, not to mention Trump talks about these tariffs like we're bringing in these billions and billions of dollars for the tariffs. We're going to pay down our debt. Our debt's $37 trillion.
Yes.
This week he floated the idea we're going to use this tariff money and send everybody a $2,000 check.
Yeah.
From where?
Yeah.
If everybody got a $2,000 check, Stephen, that would be $600 billion. We're only supposed to bring in $300.
Mm.
So none of this makes sense. He knows it. His team knows it. They like the idea.
So why are they doing it? It doesn't make sense. What do you mean? If it doesn't make sense, why is he saying it? Why is he bloviating about it? Why is he acting as if it's prophesied, for crying out loud?
Because
why?
Nothing makes him more of a kingmaker than sitting in the White House and having people, having world leaders show up, bringing him gold bars, frankincense, and myrrh, and saying, please, sir, can we give you a jet plane? Can we build a resort with your name on it in our country? None of this makes sense. And listen, there are many things we shouldn't be dependent on. I was just speaking to an investor a week ago who invested in a U.S. company that's actually mining rare earth minerals. Great idea. We should not be so dependent on China for rare earth minerals. Biden tried to address this with the CHIPS Act, right? During COVID, we realized that the supply chain is so broken, we should not be this dependent on foreign countries. So we should address it. But not unilaterally, right? One of the businesses that's suing the White House on the tariffs, it's not Walmart, it's not Target, it's a toy maker in Chicago that makes toys for kids with special needs. You think they wouldn't like to make those toys in the US? They would love to. We don't have that manufacturing. Think about clothing that you make. We don't make shirts, shoes, and sneakers here. So if suddenly we're saying these low margin businesses, we're gonna impose these big tariffs, it would be great if we made that stuff here. We simply don't. And this notion that we're going to is nonsense. We are not seeing all sorts of companies suddenly opening giant factories and people saying, great, I can't wait to start building T-shirts outside of Pittsburgh.
And before I let you get on out of here, what about all this noise they make about the pledges? 15 trillion plus in pledges from companies to the U.S. manufacturing industry and all and semiconductors and all. I'm like, what are you talking about? And by the way, it's very, very simple to me. I didn't even have to look up who made the commitments. Just because you pledge doesn't mean a damn thing. You can always renege when you want to. And if you can renege with anybody, you can certainly do it under the Trump administration. I'm not going for that. I'm not buying that. What is that about?
It's about headlines. It's about a show, right? Donald Trump is a fantastic showman, and he's great at branding. Right. They said it years ago in the first term. Foxconn was going to come here to the state of Wisconsin. They were going to break ground. Never came. And a lot of these businesses, if you really look in the fine print of their saying they're going to build this, they're going to create this, much of what they've announced, they were already doing it. They're just putting lipstick on that pig and saying, standing next to Trump, saying, look, we're doing it now. These CEOs, because people keep getting angry that like companies are bending the knee. I don't know that so many companies are bending the knee. They're playing the game. Most CEOs out there don't, at least in their professional life, don't have a political affiliation. If you're a CEO, you need to keep your customers happy, you need to keep your shareholders happy, and you need to keep your employees happy. Doesn't matter who wins as president, doesn't matter who becomes the mayor of New York. If you're the CEO, you need to figure out, how do I play ball with this administration? And this president wants to get his kisses. He wants to get his gifts. And we're watching business leader after business leader show up at this White House and do it. The one place that it concerns me the most is in tech and AI specifically.
Because
artificial intelligence is going to change every element of our lives. These tech titans who are surrounding the president at the White House are going to be the masters of the universe to a scale that we don't even comprehend. And imagine this next new frontier facing little to no regulation. We know how that worked out. You're a father. We know how detrimental that was with the social media companies to our children. AI is that times 1,000. There are so many great elements of what AI could do. But the fact that you now have a president, or you now have people from the AI universe that are so close to an administration, it should worry us, because we want, not regulation isn't good or bad. Smart regulation is necessary to protect the American people and to help businesses flourish.
What role is Stephanie Ruhle going to play in bringing attention to these issues and making sure these issues are addressed in the manner in which it deserves, as a member of the media, as a member of MS Now moving forward?
It is my job, thank you, not to bring on spokespeople, not to bring on talking heads or pundits. I will tell you, and it's a big frustration for me, I would love to have more Republicans on my air. And I think, unfortunately, right now, this moment that we're in, Republicans who will come on TV and be critical of this president for any reasons,
slim to none,
get annihilated if they're critical of him. The White House kills him. And then the group who will come on for the sole purpose of owning the libs or performing for the president. I want to be clear. Nobody is invited on my program who wants to own anybody, right? This ain't the NBA. Nobody is here to slam dunk anyone. I'm going to take the most important news stories with the best reporters and explain them on our air, and then I'm going to bring on the best analysts to analyze it with the goal every night, how do we help people get better and smarter? And if I can do that for 1 hour a day, that's a win for me.
Good luck. I don't think you need it, but good luck. You're wonderful. It's good to see you.
Great to see you.
All right. Back with more Straight Shooter, Stephen A. 34 minutes past hour number two back here on Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Smith, coming at you, as I love to do every Wednesday night over the airwaves of SiriusXM POTUS Radio. Number to call up, as always, is 866-967-6887. That's 866-967-6887, 866-96-POTUS. Got a few lines open, getting to the calls for the very first time, because I had Representative Madeline Dean out of the 4th District of Pennsylvania, Democrat out of the 4th District of Pennsylvania. And, of course, you just heard me with Stephanie Ruhle, formerly of MSNBC with the 11th Hour show. And now it's going to be named MS Now. So you've heard her positions. You heard her feelings. You know where she stands. Appreciate both perspectives that the ladies provided on this particular day, day 43 of the shutdown. It is now coming to an end. The shutdown will end. And obviously our government will be back up and running. People will be employed. They will be paid retroactively for time missed, et cetera, et cetera. I will tell you, I'm very alarmed by what Representative Dean pointed out, how individuals who happen to be senators implicated, this is senators allowed to sue the United States government over January 6th phone records due to Senate passed revision tucked into the spending package. Senator Lindsey Graham, who's been a guest on the show, Senator Marsha Blackburn, Senator Bill Hagerty, Senator Josh Hawley, Senator Dan Sullivan. Obviously, Blackburn is out of Tennessee, so is Hagerty. Hawley is out of Missouri. Dan Sullivan is out of Alaska. Tommy Tuberville is out of Alabama. Ron Johnson is out of Wisconsin. Cynthia Loomis is out of Wyoming. My question is this. What the hell are you needing to sue the government for? And don't you understand that when you sue the government, you're essentially asking for taxpayer money to come into your pockets? As far as I'm concerned, the potential of any damn lawsuit from them should be thrown out the window for the 43-day shutdown alone. You were getting paid then while American citizens weren't getting paid, who were working for the federal government. Who are you to come and get even more of our additional dollars to pad your pockets, let alone at $500,000 per case, up to $500,000 per case? I mean, that's just as crooked as hell. 866-96-967-6887, 866-96-POTUS. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Michael in Connecticut. You're live with Stephen A., Straight Shooter. What's up?
Hey, Stephen A., how you doing, man?
I'm all right. You're live on the air, bro. Go ahead.
Hey, man, so first of all, I just want to say, huge fan of your work. I've been following you, you know, for many years on ESPN, obviously, and I really appreciate the platform that you're bringing with politics. My question is, so I'm an independent Democrat-leaning voter, and I'm very young. I just turned 25 yesterday. And obviously, you know, as someone who's young, right, you know, I have many elections to come where I'm going to be a voter. I'm going to be, you know, making my voice heard for who I want to represent us. Presidential level, state level, so be it, right? But I'm really disgusted with the state of affairs of our political situation right now, if that makes sense, because, you know, I think Trump is a big reason for that, you know, his divisiveness and just, you know, the things that he says. And then the government shutdown, I mean, you've been talking about it ad nauseum about, you know, just how unfair it is to the people who work for the government who can't get paychecks and who are not able to, you know, make ends meet and all that stuff. And, you know, and obviously, this whole fiasco with the Democrat eight senators who crossed the aisle to fund.
Right. I need you to get to your question, though, my brother. I got other callers on the line. I appreciate your perspective, but I need you to get to your question. Okay. What is it?
Right. Okay. So my question is, as a young voter, right, for someone who wants to be hopeful for the future of our country, what advice would you give to me?
Here's the advice.
Who wants to look for hope?
Here's the advice I would give to you. First of all, know what issues you care most passionately about and pay attention to those issues and those who are proponents of it and those who are adversaries of it. Study position from both sides of the aisle and both angles and decide what's best. Be a participant in local elections, because that's what really affects the average everyday American citizen, even more so than federal legislation that comes down the pike. And you pay attention from that, and you can only change from within. And in terms of strengthening and hardening your intestinal resolve, the one other thing that I would say to you is this: prepare to be frustrated. Because in a binary system that we're living in, you're never going to be happy 100% of the time. It's never going to happen. There are going to be things about both sides that absolutely disgust you. But most importantly, more importantly than anything else, what should disgust you more than anything is the inability for both sides to work together on behalf of the American people. Show your side. They show their side. And we peel what's best for the American people from that. If you know that's what they're doing, then you would feel much better about it. You don't feel much better about it because you know it's exactly what they're not doing. So we have to do everything that we can to foster them doing exactly that for the sanity of America as a society. These politicians throw us to the wolves on far too many occasions as a collective body. They don't come together thinking about what's in our betterment. They think about what's in their betterment. And they, on far too many occasions, have used us as pawns. And that's why there's so much vitriol and cynicism and viciousness that we're aiming towards one another. I promise you, if we could do it to them as easily as we do it to ourselves, we would. And they wouldn't act the way that they act. But unfortunately, they're insulated to some degree because of that. And as a result, we find ourselves in these precarious times. I got to run. I appreciate the call, Michael. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Derek in New York. You're live with Stephen A. Talk to me, D. How are you?
Hey, what's up? Why is it the House, I've seen the government shutdown, but the House, why is the Senate, like the House is more partisanship than the Senate's more? Like the House seems to be, they're more united than the Senate.
Well, it's not so much that. What happened is, and I mean, you could say that because obviously, you could take that position, but the Senate, essentially, you had Trump pushing for the GOP for a filibuster. You know, to eradicate the filibuster, that they could just get 51 votes and that would be that, as opposed to requiring 60. But the flip side to that is that with the Senate, you had three senators and Fetterman and a couple of others that were willing to cross party lines to vote against the government shutdown. And they were looking for about five or six more additional figures. And for the longest time, they held out until they couldn't anymore. You had, for the most part, members on the left in the Senate holding a hard line, along with House Democrats saying we're not budging one inch because we got to address the Affordable Care Act subsidies because prices for health care are going to double and it's going to be a hindrance to the American consumer, blah, blah, blah. And they drew a hard line in the sand, but Trump wouldn't budge. And what some of those senators were saying, look, he's not going to budge. If you're in Pennsylvania, if you're in Nevada, if you're in New Hampshire, we got constituents here that ain't going for that. And we can't afford all of this stuff. We got to make something happen. And that was their position. And so because that was their position and you were waiting for the Senate because the House had already voted on it and you were waiting for the Senate, our focus was on the Senate and the divide that existed between them. Whereas the House, it had already been decided because the Republicans already had the majority. And that was that.
You can see that. The problem is solved with caucuses. The Republicans and the province office are draining Democrats. If you vote no to it, you should immediately resign the province office caucus. I'm hearing that on X, all that. They're saying that.
Well, we'll see. I mean, the reality is that the shutdown is going to end and that enough Democrats caved to side with the GOP because they knew that it was unwise to test the resolve of the GOP under Trump because Trump was making the case, no matter how much it's going to hurt us, it's going to hurt them. And the Democrats have strategized about this all along, assuming that they would have the leverage because it would be perceived as a Trump shutdown, Trump shutdown, Trump shutdown. And sure enough, the polls were showing that the Republicans were being blamed more than the Democrats. But in the end, Trump didn't care because, as has been the case, he believed, you know, most people believe he gets what he wants from the GOP, because if he doesn't, he's going to attack them and they're going to get booted out of office. And so when your primary concern is keeping your job as opposed to doing your job, you're going to end up capitulating to the president of the United States if you're a member of the GOP whose name is not Marjorie Taylor Greene, because she certainly ain't capitulating to a lot of stuff that he's talking about right now. But that's about it. They knew that. And as a result, they knew and suspected that the Republicans wouldn't fold. And that's why they got in panic mode. And they ultimately decided to acquiesce and cave in.
Last question. Chuck Schumer, is he worried about as leadership next year? Is he worried about his
not next year, 2028. Leadership? He definitely, I don't expect him to win. I think Chuck Schumer's done. I think that enough Democrats, Ro Khanna has spoken out against him. AOC in her own way has done so. Looking at what happened with Mamdani in the mayoral election in New York City and the direction that they're going in, you know, I think that a lot of people see Chuck Schumer as non-effective and they think it's time for change. Ro Khanna, representative out of California, said it. Senator Schumer is no longer effective and should be replaced. If you can't lead the fight to stop healthcare premiums from skyrocketing for Americans, what will you fight for? That's their position, and a lot of their contemporaries feel the exactly same way. So I think Chuck Schumer's days are numbered. Appreciate the call, man. Thank you so much. Let's go to Mike in Chicago. You're live with Stephen A. Talk to me, Mike.
Yeah, I was listening to Stephanie, but I guess she's gone. But one point, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Chicago Democrat, but I watched 60 Minutes Sunday for probably the first or second or third time in 10 years.
Okay.
And two farmers that were just about gone. They were just about under. Soybeans couldn't afford their they couldn't afford their equipment, and on and on and on, and everybody that they knew. All right? They said the tariffs are hurting us too because things are way more expensive than what we had before. And then they said, but Donald Trump's a real smart guy and he could figure this out. And that pretty much says, and down in Chile they gave them, and they're lying about that now, $20 billion to $40 billion, and they're saying it was a loan and it was only a billion. They just don't play by the same rules. So use the sports analogy, which I know you're used to. They've got 14 guys on the field, and they throw a flag, and they don't come off the field.
I got you.
They just stay on the field.
All right. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot. You're absolutely right. They are playing by different rules, but it's because they can afford to, because the American people is going for it. And that's really what we're talking about. Listen, before I get back to my call, Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, is on the House floor right now talking about this shutdown issue coming to an end. Jeffries, Hakeem Jeffries, I apologize. A minority leader House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries is speaking on the House floor right now. Let's hear what he has to say real quick. Let's chime into that.
Next year, and in the speakership of Donald J. Trump once and for all. That's how this fight ends. Mr. Speaker, during this painful Trump Republican shutdown, what we've seen is two different philosophies in terms of how to govern for the American people. The Democratic Party philosophy is clear. We are ready, willing, and able to find bipartisan common ground anytime, any place, to enact spending agreements that actually make life better for the American people. But in order to do that, we need to have partners on the other side of the aisle who are actually willing to find a bipartisan path forward.
I don't want to hear anything about partners. That's the problem with our politics. Y'all haven't been partners in over a decade. What have you been willing to work on? Everything is partisan. Every Democrat voting for, every Republican voting against, every Republican voting for, every Democrat voting against. It's nothing new. What do you mean working together? Did you work together leading up to the election? Who the hell was the advisor? Who's the hell was the Democratic strategist that told y'all focusing on the LGBTQ plus community. And 1% of this population with transgender folks should be a more pertinent issue than 13.6% of the population with black folks that were suffering with affordability issues in this country leading up to the election. Who told you that? This is the kind of BS I'm talking about. Everybody and their grandmama knows. Cost of living, affordability, safety in the streets is priority. Everybody and their grandmama knows that if you have the borders flooded, forget open borders, closed borders, whatever. If you have the borders flooded, and there's an inordinate amount of people coming into the country illegally, you're going to have one side viewing it as a good thing because they're going to talk about how we're a mosaic and we have an open door policy and we welcome all. And you're going to have the other side saying, yo, we got folks that are undocumented that is in our country. And they're going to point to crime and all of this other stuff and embellish and exaggerate and sully the waters for campaign purposes. Did you pay attention to that? You didn't. And what happened? Instead of focusing on issues that work for every American, affordability, safety, and showing that you had a better economic plan and scheme, you tried to guilt folks into voting for you. And now here we talking about the importance of working together. Anybody trying to hear that right now? 8 Democrats crossed and voted with the GOP. Shut down over. I flow with Madeline Dean. I like her. Because her candor ain't subjective. It seems to be perpetual. Maybe that's what the Democrats should try. Maybe that might win you an election. A real one. Not the one that was a foregone conclusion that just passed. More Straight Shooter with Stephen A. 53 minutes past hour number 2 back here in the Stephen A. Smith Show. I'm sorry, Straight Shooter with Stephen A. Coming at you every Wednesday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over the airwaves of SiriusXM POTUS Radio. Let's get back to the phones at 866-967-6887. That's 866-96-POTUS. Let's go to Chris in Virginia. You're live with Stephen A. Chris, what's up?
Good evening, sir. Hey, I wanted to apologize to you from the first time I talked to you. I maybe came off a little brash with the numbers I gave you. Wasn't trying to correct you like that, but, you know, I think it was a two-way street, but
No, I apologize as well. You know, you were right. You had the correct information. I did not. Period. Men are men, my brother. You were right. I stand corrected, and I appreciate the education. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. But I wanted to push back on the Biden situation. Sure. A lot of people say that same thing. Well, what did Biden do when he came in office, and why didn't he look into Epstein and so on and so forth? My question is, why should he have looked into Epstein?
No, sir. That's not what I was saying. I wasn't talking about looking into Epstein. I was simply making the case that if the Epstein files were there and available under Democratic power, okay, then you could have released it then. So why is it a big deal to release it now when you've always had it? That's my point. That's all.
My thing about that is that first and foremost, everything was under seal. The first thing was, we came out of an administration where that president got fired because of the economy, because of the pandemic, because of the job loss, because of the bad oil deals. First, you want to produce more than you can handle. Then COVID shows
But Chris, I think you're thinking about Biden. And I'm telling you, I'm not thinking about Biden. I'm thinking about the Democrats that are in office that are gung-ho about releasing it now. I'm saying they could have done that before, too. That's all I'm saying.
Well, what I'm saying is there is so much to doing this, looking forward, to everything that the Democratic Party and the Democratic president had to do to get this country back on line through COVID and everything else, mm-hmm. there's no way he would have did it. And what they did, they would turn around and bring up this, say, okay, we got all this other stuff going on, all these other, and possible mm-hmm. a new election coming up, mm-hmm. and we're going to stop and we're going to pump the brakes and
I got you.
Try to unseal an Epstein case.
I got you. I'm running out of time because I only got 2 minutes. I appreciate your call. I get where you're coming from. And by the way, thanks for the call. You know, the Epstein files and the Biden DOJ, there may be more legal nuance, but the general thing was the DOJ didn't release the full Epstein files, primarily because federal law sharply restricts disclosure of grand jury materials. Under federal rule of criminal procedure 6E, grand jury evidence is kept secret to protect witnesses, informants, victims, and the integrity of ongoing or past investigations. And the Justice Department cannot unilaterally release this material either. So it's a lot to get into, but I get where you're coming from. I understand. David in Massachusetts, you're live with Stephen A. Real quick, David, go ahead.
All right, quick question. Do you believe there's a possibility that we can return to civilized, dignified discourse both within the government and in mainstream America?
I think mainstream America has to take it upon ourselves to do it. I think it's harder to pull off, David, when politicians don't do it because we're so disgusted at the power and the dominion that they have over our lives when they act like juvenile delinquents and don't know how to act comport themselves. It really rakes our last damn nerves, and they give us an excuse to lose our minds. And I think that that's the kind of stuff that happens. But when they act accordingly and they set a standard that compels us to follow it, I think it goes a long way towards serving the American people better. We don't need them to do it in order for us to be intelligent and decent and civil enough to do it ourselves. But it is more challenging for us to do it when we're utterly disgusted by how they conduct themselves and we're watching them get away with it. I got to get on out of here. That's it for this edition of Straight Shooter with Stephen A. I'll be back a week from now, next Wednesday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time over the airways of POTUS Radio, channel 124. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining the show. Stephen A. signing off. Peace and love.